Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, Jim, what are you wearing?
These are just my normal, you know, bumming around clothes. What do you mean?
So you're saying that when you hang out at home, you dress like a flower?
Pretty much. Okay, so it's Tuesday here of Genesis Week. We have with us Genesis superfan Kevin Goff.
Hello. Hi, Jim.
And also Rob Gates.
Hey, Jim.
And I'm Jim. What?
No. I said, hey, Jim. Hey, Kevin.
Oh, nice. And I'm Jim Lenihan, and this is Rockin' the Suburbs. Patrick Foster is away dealing with some family business, and he's out of state. And so we took this as an opportunity to talk about Genesis. We're talking about Genesis all this week. We also have the new puppy here, Shadow, who is causing some havoc in here in the basement. And then also, we should give a shout-out to this fantastic... There, see, Shadow's giving a shout-out. This fantastic beer you brought, Rob. Tell us about that.
So this is a pale ale from the Great Main Brewery, which is one of the newer breweries in the Northern Virginia area. Not yet open for business, but I understand that that is coming. And actually started by a coworker of mine who treats us with beer from time to time.
It is good.
Thank him for that.
Yep.
It is really good. And this is a pale ale, which it's very tasty, very refreshing. Good, clean taste to
Definitely.
It. Yes. Good flavor.
These days, anything that's not an IPA
that's is right.
A-okay in my book.
Same here.
And Kevin, you brought something too. Maybe we'll talk about that later in the week.
Yeah.
All right. All right. So thanks, as always, thanks for bringing the beer. Good stuff. The dog is really, yeah, he's really jacked up about this. He's a Peter Gabriel fan.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Channeling. He's looking for the lamb.
Yeah.
The dog's looking for the lamb. It's pretty clear.
All right. We may have to have an intervention with this dog here in a second. So, all right. So yesterday we kind of did a quick sort of overview, the different periods of Genesis. It is the history is sort of more vast than even I understood, starting from the late 60s into how long did they go? Well, I mean, with Phil Collins, they went into the 90s, right?
Yeah, yeah. 95, 96, I think. Yeah. Maybe not quite that. No, Phil Collins was out, I think, 94. Yeah, 93, 94. Okay. They were still touring at that point.
So a good sort of 25-year history of the band, essentially.
Yeah.
The Genesis band. Mm-hmm. Okay. And what a lot of people didn't necessarily know when Genesis started to really become popular in the United States is that Phil Collins was not the original lead singer. Who was that, Kevin?
Peter Gabriel.
Peter Gabriel, who a lot of people knew because he was having solo success
right
in the U.S. So it was really interesting to sort of like match that up and be like, oh, that's...
Yeah, I discovered odd. It. Yeah. I kind of went backwards. Like, as I mentioned in the previous show, it was about Phil Collins and the drumming for me when I came into this band. So hearing that Peter Gabriel was front of this band at some point left me a lot of discovery to do. And
so, right. And so you learn that not only did Peter Gabriel start off with Genesis and was their original lead singer, but he dressed in crazy costumes.
Yes.
They were much more of a prog rock band,
yeah.
You know, all of this kind of stuff, which, you know, one thing I'll say, we're not going to get into their solo work, but everybody talks about Phil Collins as being sort of a pop star, bringing a pop sensibility to Genesis when he sort of was able to put his stamp on the band and be the true right. front man. But that is true. But after Peter Gabriel left and started a solo career, yes, he did some like odd stuff or whatever, but he did a lot of pop songs too. You know,
he did,
you know, even the, you know, Salisbury Hill, which was like his first hit.
Yep.
That was, you know, pretty yeah. poppy little tune.
I would yeah. say Shock the Monkey even yeah. was recognizable by most people.
Yeah. It's a hooky song.
Yeah,
yeah,
definitely.
Absolutely. And then you get into like his Sledgehammer years and yeah. all that kind of stuff, and he was a big pop star too.
Video star too.
Yeah, absolutely. So who knows? If he had stuck around, he might have taken the band in a similar direction
yep.
regardless. Yeah.
Definitely.
I was trying to think of another band that's analogous to that, and I really can't come up with one. Bob Welch, of course, was in Fleetwood Mac,
right?
And then left early and had a successful solo career, but not nearly to the extent that Gabriel did after he left Genesis.
And have the other bands still survive and go forward? I can't find a comparable. Van Halen, maybe? I don't know.
Van Halen, the different the thing there is it's like the inverse. They brought in a guy who already was a successful solo
artist.
That's true. You know?
Definitely. And then 10,000 Maniacs, you think about that band, and like they just didn't. 10,000 Maniacs fizzled out once Natalie Merchant went off on her solo career. But I can't think of a parallel.
You could argue Pink Floyd. Roger Waters went on, had a successful solo career, but again, not to the extent at all that Gabriel did, which I think is the big separator here. And Pink Floyd, I would say, arguably did not, or I should say regressed after Waters left, whereas Genesis continued to mature and became bigger.
Yeah,
I mean, both wings got huge.
Yep.
Yeah, completely. I mean, you've had other bands that have changed lead singers because of, like, tragedy, like AC/DC would be an example of that. But but Genesis is also weird because they had huge success with a singer who was already in the band. Like, they didn't go out and find another guy and put that guy in and have, like, a whole other thing. It wasn't like a Fleetwood Mac situation where you bring in Lindsay and Stevie, right, and have a different career. Like, he was there almost all along. I mean, he came in very early on in the band's career. Yeah,
sort of like the backup quarterback
that
didn't get to play until Drew Bledsoe got injured.
That's right. And then they went on to even bigger success.
Exactly.
Right? So, yeah, it is. I think it's got to be unique in rock history, I would think.
I would argue, and I would be interested in hearing what people think about this point, is that I actually believe that it probably helped everybody's career and the fans when Peter Gabriel decided to leave the band, and that it gave you all these different paths to follow. Genesis survived. Peter Gabriel had his own career. And I think the fans probably were into both for a while.
Right.
Until, you know, I think when Genesis finally, like, went into that pop mode and started having all those big hits, there was probably a different crowd that came in at that point. But I still think those fans were there. And the ones that have stuck with it are fans of the prog rock and fans of the pop stuff. They have all this music to pull from now. And if you look at Peter Gabriel's solo stuff, and I don't want to go too deep into that, but he still was relying on Steve Hackett and Phil Collins to record on those first few solo albums.
That's right, yep.
And it's because he didn't know how to write without them. I read that somewhere that he felt like he wasn't classically trained in music, so he didn't know how to work with other musicians, and so felt it was easier to bring those guys in and help him get through it. So
isn't that interesting? Because I think a lot of people think of Peter Gabriel as being this, like, really innovative musician, you know, in his with Genesis and in his solo work. But yeah, he was like a lot of other guys in rock history, like, didn't really know music theory and all that kind of stuff. He was just sort of doing what he thought worked, you know. So okay, so we talked yesterday, the debut album was From Genesis to Revelation. It's really kind of an outlier, and then where you really get into the prog rock Genesis sound was with 1970 with Trespass, right? And
Nursery Crime after that,
and then Nursery Crime is there,
and then Foxtrot I think is what kind of solidified, and
that's where the costumes come in
exactly.
That kind of stuff, right? All right, so let's go into that Foxtrot album and hear this song, Kevin, you picked, called Supper's Ready.
All 24 minutes.
I turn the television off. Sitting beside you, I look into your eyes as the sound of motor cars fades in the night time. I swear I saw your face change. It didn't seem quite right. And it's hello, babe, with your guardian hair so blue. Hey, my baby, don't you know our love is true? distance falls around our bodies. Out in the garden, the moon seems very bright. Six saintly shrouded men move across the lawn slowly. The seventh walks in front.
All right, that's just the opening of the song. I'm just getting a little taste there of Supper's Ready.
It kicks in. It does.
Yeah.
It does.
So is that the whole side two of the album?
I think there's one other song, but there's only six on the album.
Right.
Again. And yes, it might be the whole second side. Who knows? I probably only ever had it on CD.
So. Okay.
But yeah. Don't ask me what it's about. I couldn't tell you. Maybe some of the fans could divulge or share that. But, that song, I know, shows up on at least four or five of their live albums, which is another thing that Genesis was famous about or famous for doing was those live shows along with the live albums that would come with it. They had kind of a prescriptive medicine or a pattern for it, much like Rush used to, in that, you know, they do two or three studio albums and then you'd see a live album from them. But that song appears on several of them or pieces of it. Contained in medleys, that kind of thing. So,
okay.
What'd it sound like to you, Rob?
I'm just trying to figure out the words. I mean, this is like a George Costanza song. We're mixing food with sex. And trying to figure out what's going on there. Yeah. Well, your supper's ready. And
I think your understanding of it is probably going to be aided by maybe, another substance or something like that, you know, this beer
well, sure. Is,
you know, that'll work.
Makes it a little easier.
Yeah. But this was indicative of the kind of stuff that they were doing.
Absolutely.
At the time.
And, you know, the long form, storytelling that's going on with Peter Gabriel, the vocal style, I think, is very unique, very Peter Gabriel. You hear that throughout his whole career. I bet you could find songs where Supper's Ready is, you know, you could find how he sang it almost exactly the same. And I actually read through research that he was saying that he was interested in putting Supper's Ready into his solo shows at some point.
But,
decided not to because he has so many songs he didn't know how he'd get through it. But and some of the fans of that period may not know what he was doing inside of Genesis. So didn't think it fit.
Sort of like the Touch of Grey Dead fans that would come to shows and be treated with all sorts of stuff except Touch of Grey. I wondered how it's going to work the dead into it.
Well, I think later in the week when we get into the long songs, that'll be something where we can talk about that as well. But, okay, so after Foxtrot was Selling Them by the Pound, right, which we talked about a little bit yesterday, but we didn't play anything off of that.
Yeah, and that album came about at a time that they were starting to get some popularity with Foxtrot, but they said that the critics were saying that they were angling to become a U.S.-focused band, like that they wanted to be a big hit in the U.S. and weren't English enough. So Selling England by the Pound, I read that Peter Gabriel said that that title was selected because they couldn't claim that they were selling out to the U.S. if they put that right as the title of their album. So, but a lot of fans consider this to be the best, definitely the best album of Peter Gabriel, if not the best album for Genesis.
Okay. And I want to hear this song, I Know What I Like in Your Wardrobe, because you mentioned that yesterday, but I don't think I've ever heard it. And you said it was kind of a hit or a fan favorite or
I'm going to be, when we play it, I'll be surprised if you won't. Oh, yeah. I have heard this.
All right, maybe.
But it's a very unique beginning, not terribly radio friendly, but it definitely, you can hear all of Genesis in it.
Are you familiar with the song, Rob?
Nope.
Okay.
Not that I know of, I should say.
For lunch, bum de dum de dum. When the sun beats down and I lie on the bench, I can always. always hear them talk.
There's always been Ethel. Jacob, wake up, you got a tidy room now. And then Mr. Lewis, wasn't the time that he was out on his own.
No, I don't think I've ever heard that.
Yeah, I didn't hear it till much later. But
it has a good melody. I could see how that would be something people would latch onto.
And that Beatles influence just shows up everywhere.
Yeah, that's a good call.
Definitely. You can hear the drums there, the very weird rhythms brought in there. The storytelling of Peter Gabriel, very clear. There's a lot of English sort of phrases, I think, in there. Come up to town. Like, what the heck does that mean? There's a future for you in the fire escape trade. What does that mean? they were very, trying to make a very British. A lot of people think it's a British folk album, not so much prog rock. You can find those on there, but a lot of the songs are like that one.
Okay. There are a couple of long. Well, actually, there's more than a couple. There's like three or four long songs on this album, too. Yeah. So there's a couple of 11-minute songs. There's a 9-minute and an 8-minute on this one.
Yeah, if someone said, what's a Peter Gabriel Genesis album I should go listen to first? I would probably point them to this one.
Okay.
Lamb Lies Down on Broadway is obvious, but this one just kind of, I think, cemented Genesis and the sound of that period.
So, is that right? Yeah. Okay. 1973, we are here. So would this one be your favorite of the Gabriel era?
Yeah, I think so. It's the one I go to most often when I'm listening to those. In terms of when I listen to Genesis and that whole period of the Peter Gabriel, I generally listen to songs. Like, I'll go pick them because they're so long. I mean, they're so... So just putting on albums was difficult.
Well, let me ask you this now. Real quick, because we had a conversation off mic where I was saying I was trying to get familiar with some of these early albums because I hadn't heard them before. But a lot of my listening, sadly, these days is at work. While I'm working, I'll put on music in my office. Nobody else can hear it, and I can have that on. But some types of music lend themselves better to that environment than others. This does not. Like, this is music that you really have to, like, pay attention to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it just wasn't, I wasn't absorbing anything. So I'm curious, how do you listen to music these days, Kevin?
It's more casual. I mean, I don't have a lot of time. If I want to listen to albums, it's going to be in the car.
Yeah, right.
But nowadays I'm listening to this podcast, so I don't know how I'd actually get through albums. So thank you, podcasts. But my habits for music, I still listen to albums. I like to listen to albums, but for some reason, the Genesis ones, they're hard, in my opinion, the earlier ones, to listen all the way through. And I think for me, it's about the songs in general, so I'll just go to the songs that I want.
Do you have trouble staying awake?
It's not that. I don't know that I can actually sing along. I can hum and know the melodies, but I don't know all the words because... They're very wordy and if I was out buying vinyl of all the Genesis albums, I would be studying the liner notes and all the lyrics, that kind of thing. That's one thing, but I never did that. So
I think there was more of a market back in the 70s for music like this because there were fewer distractions.
Yeah,
people bought albums and they would actually sit and listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Lamb. We're going to do the Lamb, right?
Yes, exactly.
Like that became an event.
Yes.
Yeah. And
very good point.
I don't think people do that as much anymore.
Definitely not.
All right. So after Selling England by the Pound, then was The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. So that was Peter Gabriel's last album with Genesis, right?
Yeah. And things were starting to get kind of weird for they were getting noticed. They were getting a lot more attention, you know, from the media, and they were touring, and the band was getting along. But I think Peter was starting to recognize that folks were more focused on him and trying to make him this rock star when he didn't really feel like one. And you know, he was more interested in the creative side of everything. Like, he wanted to he was concerned about the writing, he was concerned about the lyrics and the visuals too. The visuals were so important to him. You know, he didn't want to be considered the David Lee Roth or the, you know, the front man of this rock band.
He didn't want to be a Mick Jagger type,
exactly,
right?
Yeah.
So did he leave?
Yes, or, it was his decision to leave. Now, somewhere along the Lamb Lies Down on Broadway, they had rumors going around within the band, even though they say they were talking to one another, but that he was going to leave. And he finally just announced somewhere on that tour, is like, I'm done. I want out. And he told them, I'm going to finish out the commitment. So they finished out that tour for Lamb Lies Down on Broadway, knowing that, you know, at the end of this, he was going to be out. But I think leading up to that tour, some of the tensions around the recording of Lamb Lies Down on Broadway probably contributed to it too. Peter had been noticed by Mike William Friedkin. I'm not sure I have the name. He's the one that authored The Exorcist, basically, and was trying to break into Hollywood, and had read a story that Peter Gabriel wrote on one of the live albums. Just on the album, he wrote the story. And had reached out to Peter and told him, let's do something together. They didn't know what it was, something creative, whether it's a movie. And I think ideas that were thrown out was actually making a movie about Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. None of that panned out, but Peter had told them, like, I'm going to pursue this. And right in the middle of recording of Lamb Lies Down on Broadway, actually went and was, you know, trying to ideate with you know, a bunch of Hollywood people to kind of figure out what to do next. And I think that didn't sit well with the band. It didn't pan out for Peter in the end. And so he came back to the recording, and the band was still, you know, further along and creating all these instrumentals of songs. And then he had to layer in all these things. So the lyric writing was separate from the music, and they almost all of them point to, while they were still trying to record and finish the music, Peter would be in another room just locked away trying to write lyrics. Hmm. And it just didn't, like, they weren't fighting, but they weren't really talking or communicating, I think. And
that happens to a lot of bands. Yeah. I think. Exactly.
Again, the Beatles influence.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So what song should we hear from Lamb Lies Down on Broadway?
I'd go with Carpet Crawlers. That's probably another one that you'll say, I don't know what that is. And then you hear it and you're like, oh yeah, I've heard that.
All right, here we go.
The one that's soft and warm gives off some kind of heat. A salamander scurries into flame to be destroyed. Imaginary creatures are trapped in birth on celluloid. The fleas cling to the golden fleece, hoping they'll find peace. Each thought and gesture, a chord in celluloid. There's no hiding in memory, there's no room to avoid. The crawlers cover the floor in the red ochre corridor. On my second sight of people, they more lifeblood than before. They're moving in time to a heavy wooden door where the needle's eye is winking.
Have you heard it?
No, I have not.
I mean, well, I have, I mean, because, you know, we did the Lamb.
You did the Lamb.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
Definitely.
I mean, I just heard it now, but.
True.
But no, I had not heard that before.
Yeah, that one, they actually remade that song with Peter Gabriel in 1999. I don't remember what it was for. I think it was some charitable thing, but they actually redid that very song with Peter Gabriel.
All right. So then you mentioned he leaves the band.
Right.
And
yeah, he didn't do anything after that.
No, never heard from again.
Never heard from again.
No, I was looking it up, and it was 3 years later that he released his debut solo album. So Lamb Lies Down on Broadway came out in 74, and the Peter Gabriel debut. Many of his albums were named Peter Gabriel, by the way.
The first three. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
But the first one came out in 77. Yeah, and that was the one with Salisbury Hill.
The best part, not to get too far into it, but the covers of the albums, people, the fans actually know what to call them. Like Face Melt is one of them.
Right, that's right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But they did have just one, two, or three to them.
All of them are great. All of them are better than any of his Genesis stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then you get to do Peter Gabriel week. So
there you go.
That I can do.
So Peter Gabriel, he kind of reminds me in some ways of one of your favorite artists, Rob, which is David Bowie.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of like kind of dressing up and putting on in a lot of theatrics and then sort of kind of reinventing himself the way Bowie would. And I think, you know, in his solo career, then he would sort of wear like suit and tie kind of thing, the way that Bowie did at one point in his career. And yeah,
that's good. Yeah.
And just have different work with different musicians throughout. Yeah. You know, his
probably
entire
worked
career.
With some of the same ones that Bowie worked with. Probably. That would not surprise me at all.
You know, actually,
and kind of always pushing himself too, I think, you know, to do something interesting, but yeah.
It reminded me, somewhere, I don't know if Robert Fripp was touring with Genesis or something, that maybe he was opening or something.
Okay.
But some of the members of Genesis kept saying that seems like the band's going in two different directions. And a lot of like Tony Banks and Mike Rutherford were both thinking that Robert Fripp was trying to encourage Peter to get out. Mm. And so he was not that they were blaming him for dividing the band, but kept putting that seed in their mind that, you know, Peter seems to be heading in a different direction than the rest of the band. Don't you see that? And then later on, Peter Gabriel actually started working with Robert Fripp. So,
Okay. All right. So,
and Bowie did work with Robert Fripp.
Yes.
Yes.
That's what reminded me.
Yes.
Ah.
So, tomorrow we're going to talk about the Phil Collins period. I mean, Phil Collins was in the band with Peter Gabriel, but it became the Phil Collins band. Sort of afterward, right?
Definitely.
Yeah. So we'll talk about that tomorrow. And as a sort of transition to that, there was, what, one song with Phil Collins on vocals during the Peter Gabriel period?
It was actually on Selling England by the Pound.
Uh-huh.
And Phil Collins can be heard singing there. This one's hard to get through a little bit. It should be heard. It should be heard. It's worthy of a listen.
So he wasn't doing, you know, pop Phil Collins stuff
point. No. Okay. Definitely not Sisudio.
Okay. All right. We'll play out with that. If anyone would like to talk about Peter Gabriel, Genesis, any of that stuff, you can call, leave a message. We'll put your voice on an upcoming show. The number is 612-440-1984. Thank you, Rob. The email address, if you'd rather email, is rock@suburbspod.com, or you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those at Suburbs Pod. Also, if you'd like to see video of this recording, and why wouldn't you? You can see Kevin and Rob here. Then go to our Patreon page, patreon.com.
Not sure why they would want to, but...
Oh, of course they would. They want to so badly that they will pay money for this. So you go to patreon.com/suburbspod. All the information is there. We put videos of many of our recordings up there, and you can see behind the scenes. There was a cute dog at one point. I don't know if you... he might have been on camera.
So. It helps put names with the faces.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Here's the playout. The song is called More Fool Me.
Yeah. Say that fast, really.
When
five,
you read
five
it,
times.
You have to like stop for a second because it doesn't make any sense. More Fool Me from 1973's Selling England by the Pound, but with Phil Collins on lead vocals, right? All right. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Rob Gates.
Kevin Goff.
And we'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
Not knowing which way to turn. And there you are. Quite sure you are. knowing full well that I'd be the first one to go down, and you'd be the one who was laughing, except when things weren't going your way. And then the lady would say that she'd had enough wandering around on her own. The day you left, well, I think you knew you'd not be back.
I keep missing the 1984. Sorry.
Oh, you want to do it tomorrow?
No, I just I'm like too late. He's right on cue.
I've been scolded enough times.